This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Let's bring in Siobhan Scott as well, psychotherapist and author, author of The Minds of Mass Killers, and also your new memoir, which is out, Nightbird. Highly suggest go checking that out wherever books are sold. Siobhan, thank you for joining us. I know you got a chance to see some of that in the green room there as we were watching this. And obviously it was a very clipped up piece, but it really just, it eliminated a lot of silence, and you really saw her go boom, 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 boom from here to there to over there in a very short period of time. What was your reaction as a psychotherapist seeing someone reacting to this information, supposedly getting to them for the first time?
You know, just the bits I've seen of it, it doesn't surprise me, because people, when they're getting information that's highly stressful, they do bounce around. And sometimes from hysteria to tears to seeming calm and more grounded, but then they go back and forth. So could be legit. That was my thought.
Yeah. And that's the weird thing with Wendy, because it's always this could be. And that's what I want to go over with you today. I want to kind of go two different lines of conversation here. If Wendy knew, and if Wendy did not know, what would the behavior be of someone on either situation? And I know this is all speculation. It really could go, you know, either direction in many ways, shapes, or forms, but we're just going to try to deal with the evidence that is in front of us as far as what Wendy may or may not have known. The custody war was the catalyst for a lot of this for years. Prosecutors, they said that the case boiled down to one thing: Adelson's obsession with pulling Wendy and the kids out of Tallahassee and back to Miami. Every conviction so far, from the shooters to Meg Bonner to Charlie, Donna, all hinged on that relocation move. The jury in Donna's trial didn't just hear evidence of money changing hands. They heard a family desperate to get their daughter and grandkids away from Markel at seeming any cost. If Wendy knew, I mean, how would someone mentally turn a custody battle, a legal everyday conflict, into a justification for murder? And what has to break down in a person's moral compass to take that leap and for that to make sense? And I'm wondering if Wendy ever really did have to take that leap, or if she just kind of knew in the background, oh, there's a potential here for that with these people that are around me.
Custody disputes, for anybody who's been involved in one, particularly if it's a messy situation like this one, it's a life or death struggle. It can feel so intensely personal, and you see sides of people that you would never normally see. So how would she experience this? It could have been something that she was willing to go along with, things that in her right state of mind she never would have gone along with. But as you say, we don't know. And it's also possible that she didn't. I mean, personally watching her, I would love to believe that this lovely young woman, this mother, had nothing to do with it. But I don't know that.
Well, and it's that gray area with this whole damn thing. And that's where it feels weird as we get to Wendy. It's like, did you know? Did you not know? Is there enough? I mean, and just having knowledge that your family is capable of doing something like this, I mean, what do you do if nothing's been done? It also goes back to the see something, say something type deal. Like, if she had no idea that they were planning this murder, what do you do? I think my family might be planning a murder. I'm not sure. They've joked about it a bit. They kind of seem to talk about things in secrecy. Why don't you go investigate them? Nothing's going to happen. You can't go investigate somebody for something you know nothing about, and you just have some sort of paranoia about. Obviously, it was more than paranoia if it existed, but it comes down to you know, her reactions to all this. But if you knew, if you kind of had a feeling they were capable of it, and then your reactions are, yeah, I'm not surprised, it doesn't make you guilty of their actions.
Right. Yeah. And it's one thing to have a controlling mother and, you know, who's a bit obsessive about your kids, and, you know, clearly Donna was. But the leaping to murder is quite a leap. And if in fact, they've never done anything like this before, it's reasonable to assume that she just thought that the jokes about, you know, that her brother was making about, you know, a hitman or killing him or whatever. People do joke about things like that. And it's usually in a custody dispute where you hear people say those things. And one part of them might have that as a this subliminal wish, but it's quite a leap, as you say, to actually hiring a hitman.
Yeah,
it is. And I think when people are going through divorce or they've been betrayed or, you know, dare I say, even cheated on, you start thinking things that you normally wouldn't think.
Yeah,
it's a trauma response. Again, it doesn't mean that you go stand on a street corner and go, hey, buddy, you know, I got it.
Where's a glimpse into Stacy's mind right now?
Well, you know, things happened to me and I felt really angry.
Did you think you could just go somewhere in downtown Wausau and go, hey, buddy?
But I never did that. I mean, if there was ever justification for being nuts, though.
I'm just asking, like, did you think you could go to a street corner in Wausau and just do that? Like, to see who shows up? I do hits on the side. I know I'm selling lemonade over here, but my 14-year-old over there just got a new rifle, looking to make some money for college.
Hey, you know, there's a lot of hunting and fishing that goes on around here. It's possible. It's possible. Yeah. But I didn't resort to anything like that. I got angry and hired an attorney.
Yeah.
And that's what rational people do.
Yeah.
You know, and you pack your shit and you move out and you move on with your life. So what happens in somebody's brain that they resort to this? That they don't go to this normal pattern of, okay, how do I pick up my life and move on and get going with things? They resort to this, that I need to eliminate this person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would life be easier if this person were gone? Absolutely. Is it the right thing to do? Not at all. Mm-hmm. There's a way to separate your life from somebody who's caused you pain so that it's over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You get to move on. They don't have to be dead for you to move on. Mm-hmm. So where's this disconnect between a rational person who says, okay, well, that person's going to be my ex and I never have to deal with them again, or I'll let my attorney deal with it, to I need to eliminate them from the face of this earth.
Right. Right. It's as you say, it's not rational. And that's the thing that I think makes this case so unusual, is this family that appeared to be so loving and, you know, upstanding in the community, and people thought well of them, people perhaps that didn't know them other than superficial level. There's just this core of rot here that people like this with this appearance would stoop to something like this. And now that there's been two convictions, well, more than two, if you include the hitman and his cronies, it's why we're talking about it, because it is just flipping weird.
Let me ask you what you would take of the authenticity of the portion of her police interrogation early on, where she is bringing up a lot of people. We quite often go back to the piece in the interrogation where she does bring up her family and she brings up her brother. Well, he joked about this, but he really is, if we're going for context here, one of many people that are brought up as any random possibility, including Dan himself. She openly contemplates, could have Dan killed himself? And the answer is a resounding no over and over in her own mind. But she's it feels like she's exploring all this. I mean, and then, well, he has a new girlfriend. Like, well, could that be anything? Of course, you would think about those things, but she seems to work that out, going, no. She does go to weird aspects of, she's real pretty for 50. In the middle of all this, but I get your mind's kind of going everywhere at that moment in time. She does identify, or attempts to identify, or at least look at all the possible roads and paths of what could have happened to Danny before just going to Charlie and her family herself. But she does identify that as a possible road very early on. What does it say about any of this?
it feels like, you know, people do go to this could have been kind of thing. And it feels legit to me. Yeah. I mean, you know, again, I can't say I'd love to be a mind reader, but it's not surprising to me if this was news to her that her brain would be taking her in a lot of different directions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it's also, you have to wonder where her brain is then taken shortly after this, when she does start talking to Mom more, and the conversation ends up, you know, going back about her own ex-boyfriend and the idea of, well, where were you that one day at this point in time in the afternoon? Is that setting it up, or where will you be? Because that was preemptive. That's the weird part. It's not of a where were you. It's a where will you be? Where will you be traveling on this specific day? And will it maybe line up with where this murder takes place? Those are the little nuggets that she's thrown out into the ether that make you go, why would you even ask that if you know that there's nothing going on that day?
Mm-hmm. Right. That makes sense.
Let's take a look at, this is some testimony. I grabbed testimony from the Charlie Adelson trial, not Donna's. We just watched Donna's not too long ago, because I think the closer we can go back in time, or the further we can go back in time, the more raw of an emotion and reaction we can get from Wendy. And I know we can go back even further to the McBona and all that, but I thought some of her reaction specifically, because they were pointing a lot out to Wendy in Charlie's trial and getting her reactions there, may even speak louder. She was more descriptive. She spoke more in Charlie's trial than she did that of her mother. Let's take a look at her reaction here to this when talking about Charlie.
Maybe if I hadn't divorced him, he would still be alive. Maybe this is my fault because I complained to the wrong person. Maybe Danny gave a student a bad grade and they came after him. I just was trying to think of who possibly could have wanted to hurt him.
But you didn't say any of that before. I mean, the first thing you said was Charlie, right?
I don't think so.
Page 25 of your interview, line 5 through 15. Do you have any reason to dispute? Page 25, not 5 hours into it, you say Charlie might have done it, right?
Can I see, please?
You may. This is going to be tab 1.
What I say here is that he would never do it. Right under the highlighted part, I say, no, he would never.
Page 25, line 5 through 15. I mean, my brother, the one, his name is Charlie, the one I'm really close to. He makes a lot of jokes in that taste, and it was a joke he made. He bought the TV for me this morning that got broken, and then I was talking to him about whether it made sense to pay or fix it, or whether I should get a new one. And it was always his joke that, like, he knew that Danny always treated me badly. And it was always his joke. He said, I looked into hiring a hitman and it was cheaper to get you this TV. So instead I got you this TV. And you do say you don't think he would do it, but can we agree you brought up his name on page 25 of the interview?
I did.
When asked, would you ever ask someone to do something like this? You say not in a million years. When asked, okay, do you think someone would do this for your benefit without asking you? You say no. And when Isom starts to ask you, what good does it serve? You say, I mean, my brother, the one, his name is Charlie. Isn't that how it went?
This is the transcript, but I think there's also inaccuracies in the transcription.
Oh boy.
All right.
Do you want the culpable parties held accountable for murdering the father of your children?
Absolutely. I'm grateful they're already in jail.
But not if it's your family.
It's not my family.
I mean, somebody hired them, right?
Not necessarily.
Somebody paid them.
I learned something.
I'm not even going to say a word. Siobhan, thoughts? What the hell just happened there?
You know, it's a mishmash. It's a mishmash. I'm at a loss, really. It's hard without the entire context to make sense of what she says.
Because she's, I mean, she gets so defensive. I mean, and I'm glad they did it. I mean, it seems like a child that's being caught in something that they know that they may have some sort of partnership in or something to do with or knowledge of. But I'm going to get really motivated right here when I say these words. She has like the emotional regulation of a 10-year-old. In terms of how she expresses things, and as clueless as a 10-year-old is, that they're giving away so many tells with the way that they're speaking, but she's a grown ass adult. It just really feels like this woman. I don't know. I mean, she feels just so dug into this idea, and she's so quick to expect others to believe and accept a ridiculous excuse of, I think there may be errors in this transcript. It's a video of you. They went back, they transcribed it. They're making sure it's pretty accurate because it's already on video. We're not live closed captioning something in here and the weird words are not hitting the screen. Mm-hmm. She just seems to go and, well, so there's errors in the transcript then. It seems very Donna-ish, where like when confronted with facts and reality, it's like, well, then your facts are wrong. Then the information on the sheet that you're reading is wrong. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. You are. Mm-hmm. But if you just keep saying no and diving back into that weird place of comfort that she sits in, that's weird.
Yeah. And, you know, we always talk about memory and how memory can be very biased. And in our minds, we rewrite things that happened and change the story all the time. And this has got to be, I mean, she's fighting for her life in essence here, and her vision of her family. And so is this intentional? Is it unconscious? Or is it just she's trying to rewrite history because it feels better to her? So it reduces her dissonance.
And with a family like this, you almost need to. I mean, whether you've been involved with their acts or not, I mean, I would think just to kind of mentally do the gymnastics to keep going every day and not say, what am I doing? Donna was painted as the ringleader, obviously, in the trial, the matriarch who gave the marching orders. And the jury bought it. They convicted her of murder, conspiracy, and solicitation. Prosecutors portrayed her as the woman who wouldn't take no for an answer. And, you know, again, mini Donna right here, well, the transcript's wrong, who controlled the family with a mix of guilt and pressure. If Wendy knew, then she wasn't just a daughter. She was a soldier under that command. I mean, how does being raised under a domineering parent like Donna warp your sense of choice at the end of the day here? I mean, is silence complicity or just survival when the family system is built on loyalty and fear to mom?
Yeah, loyalty to family above all, and keep mom happy and do mom's bidding. The interesting thing is for a person raised in a family like this, they don't realize that their family is off. They don't get that this is not normal. And that's, I think, the thing that makes it so insidious. As I keep saying, it's like the mafia, you know, it's like this is just the way we do things. This is our culture.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.